This is an iHeart podcast.
Tucker Carlson joins us tonight. That'll be fun. We'll talk about illegals voting in our elections with Benjamin Weingarten, some rough jobs news, all that and more coming up on I'm Right. There are huge things going on in the country right now. We have Tucker Carlson. He's going to join us in a few minutes to discuss those things. We have a huge show for you on I'm Right. But when you do a television show, you generally want to lead with the big deal. Whatever the biggest deal is, that's you want that to be your A block, right? It's considered A block, the start of the show. What is the biggest deal? Me. As of yesterday, that's the six-year anniversary of me stopping the normal life I was living. Remember, I've lived just a very normal life my whole life, construction and RV sales. I used to wash cars, and I started doing media. 6 years ago yesterday, started out on a local radio station, KPRC, wonderful station here in Houston, a 7 o'clock at night show, just nighttime show for 1 hour. And 6 years later, I'm right here on the first nationally syndicated radio show talking to Tucker in a couple minutes. I don't even want to tell you this to say anything inspirational. I just wanted to brag. I think it's really cool what's happened. No, seriously, what a blessing it's all been. And speaking of Tucker Carlson, so he's got this huge tour he's doing. He's doing a live speaking tour in various cities. There's all kinds of famous people on there. Don Jr. and all kinds of people are on there. When he comes to my city in the Houston area, it's not Houston proper, when he comes to the Houston area, I am going to be joining him on September 18th. It's just him, me, on stage, couple hours, riffing on politics, go get some tickets. But, you know, Tucker and I have done this kind of thing before.
We don't need a military that's woman-friendly. We don't need a military that's gay-friendly, with all due respect to the Air Force. We need a military that's flat-out hostile. We need a military full of type A men who want to sit on a throne of Chinese skulls.
And soon you're Chelsea Handler. Soon it's Valentine's Day, and your womb resembles a dried-up tumbleweed blowing down an old Western town. And your Valentine's Day date for the 10th year in a row is a 10-year-old copy of Magic Mike and a half-full bottle of Xanax, and you're trying to protect. Pretend like you're happy.
Everybody watching you right now has worked for or worked with somebody who just has ambition just dripping off of their pores. And that's Kamala Harris. Those types of people will do anything to get ahead. They treat their bosses like crap. They treat their employees like crap. That's why she knifed Joe Biden in the debate with all that race nonsense. There was no need to do that. It's the same reason she cackles like a dead hyena every time she's asked an uncomfortable question. It's the same reason she started out her political career as Willie Brown's bratwurst bun. Kamala Harris will do anything to get ahead.
So he either doesn't vote in primaries, that's mostly the case, he's just going to sit at home, or even worse, he goes to vote for Senator Dork, who he sees on Fox News every time. Well, Lindsey Graham was on Fox tonight. I guess he's on my side. You should have nothing but disdain for virtually every single senator you see on Fox News. Normal people are getting sick and tired of no action, and they're running these people out. It's happening. It's happening slowly. Maybe too slowly when you consider the fact that the federal government is gleefully destroying this country. I haven't seen these people this happy since Pete Buttigieg and his husband took their baby home.
Joining me now, the man himself, Tucker Carlson. He's coming to the great state of Texas, Houston area, Rosenberg, Texas. I get to join him on stage, and that is always a good time. Tucker, obviously you have Dan and Megan, and these people are, of course, friends of mine, but clearly the headliner is going to be me.
Well, there's no doubt. And we were just talking off camera, and I meant this sincerely. There are a lot of really smart people I like to listen to, but a live venue is totally different, and it takes a certain kind of personality. You can tell who loves dealing with actual people and who'd rather be hidden away in a radio studio, and you are in the former category. I was talking to the person who's managing the tour. I was like, Jesse Kelly, you watch, will be great at this because you like actual people. So I can't wait.
Well, I mean, so much of our politics really comes down to that, doesn't it, Tucker? I mean, a genuine love of people. Either you have it or you don't. Yes. Either you care that Americans can't afford groceries or you don't. And it's not a socioeconomic thing. But sadly, there aren't any Democrats that think like that anymore. But either you feel genuine sadness that people are moving back in with their parents or you don't.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the world is divided between people who care about the people and those who care about people. In other words, it's easy to love an abstraction. You know, I love beauty. I love truth. Yeah. I love love. But it's much harder to love, like, you know, a crying five-year-old with snot on his face, you know, or a wife who's mad at you for reasons you don't really understand. Like, that's what it means to love in real life, is to love people in all their complexity and imperfection, even unfashionable people like the white working class who are dying at a younger age. Like, no one in Washington even thinks about them. They're just like some repulsive afterthought as we move on to this brand new America that doesn't speak English. But the only politicians I like are the ones who like people, and there just aren't that many.
No, that there aren't that many. Okay, so I do want to point something out. Tucker has this great series coming out. I don't want to give too much away, but here's a trailer for The Art of the Surge. Here it is.
Biden's just taken the stage of the debate.
The standard is not, are you able to stand up for 90 minutes?
I can't even understand him right now.
Trump is like riding a great racehorse, right? You put the blinders on, you guide him into the corners, and you let him run.
Look at how many people are showing up for a rally.
Yeah! Everyone, please, just make sure you're ready.
30 seconds.
Let's go, America!
The president's been shot. I repeat, the president's been shot.
Tucker, okay, I know this is going to be at TuckerCarlson.com. I know, you know, people can't exactly consume it here, but what is this all about? I have no doubt the assassination attempt of Donald Trump and Butler is going to be part of it.
Well, yeah, it's we embedded a producer and a camera crew with the Trump campaign at the beginning of the summer, and they've been with him on the plane at, you know, all the events backstage, and they happen to be there, you know, right near Trump, right just feet away from Trump when he was shot. And so that's the first installment of this series, which will extend through the fall. But, it, you know, for people who haven't covered, I mean, you've run for office. I've covered a lot of people running for office. But until you've seen what it's like, you know, outside of the rope line, it's really instructive to see what it actually looks like to run a campaign. And you understand the players much better. In this case, Donald Trump, who I know you know him, and anyone who knows Trump can tell you he's exactly the same in private as he is in public, except funnier and probably more vulgar. But he's not a different person. He's like a person you like even more. So I think it's cool. It's a window into that.
Speaking of a window into things, I still think about this assassination attempt, the timing of it, so many things. And I'm old enough to remember you going on Adam Carolla's show and saying this.
We're speeding toward assassination, obviously. And no one will say that, but I don't know how you can reach that conclusion. You know what I mean? Like, they have decided, permanent Washington, both parties have decided that there's something about Trump that's so threatening to them, they just can't have him.
Tucker, that was pre-assassination attempt, as I'm sure you remember. You saw this horrific thing coming, so they tried to imprison him. Supreme Court rules on immunity. Miraculously, right after that immunity ruling and right before he gets the official nomination for president, he's 2 inches away from having his brains blown all over a stage on live television in Pennsylvania. Tucker, could you please explain to people how you could see something so horrific coming? Because you did.
Well, I mean, I'm terrible at predicting the future. I don't think I've ever called a political race correctly. That was not even a prediction. It was just looking at the trend lines. and the attacks on Trump increased in desperation and severity, intensity, ruthlessness pretty consistently over the past 8 years. And it got to the point where they're trying to take his life away by putting him in prison until he dies, which they're still trying to do on utterly fake charges. And that wasn't working. He was becoming more popular, you know, the more they persecuted him in the courts. And so there was only one option left, and that was to murder him. And the Biden administration allowed him to get shot. That's a statement of fact. They allowed this. The Secret Service is part of the executive branch of government. It's controlled by the Biden administration, the Harris Biden administration. And they've withheld Secret Service from Bobby Kennedy up until very recently when Trump demanded it, because they were fine if he got murdered. They withheld Secret Service from Donald Trump, and they gave it over to that fake, horrible fake doctor lady who's married to Joe Biden, who was having a rally the same day with more Secret Service protection than Donald Trump. And they ignored, of course, this building 140 yards away, and where you could sort of easily hit the man on stage. They ignore. I mean, I've been to a million events with Secret Service my entire life, and I've never heard of anything like that. So they let this happen. They could say it's unintentional. It doesn't matter what the intent was. They allowed it to happen. And they've never been held to account for it. Republicans in the Congress seem to have forgotten it happened. The country seems to be forgetting it happened because of the media blackout on it. But it's really a pivot point in American history. You can't allow your political opponent to get murdered because you don't like him, but they did.
Tucker, what comes after this? Because you mentioned a pivot point, and this is where, I mean, people can call it a black pill, whatever they want to call it, but I'm trying to explain to people the imprisoning of Republicans, the attempted assassination of Republicans. You can convince yourself all day long this is going to stop once Trump is done, whether that's 4 more years in office or loses an election. But we obviously don't work that way politically. Countries don't work that way. We've entered a new phase, and this is kind of how it is now. Am I wrong?
It seems to be. I mean, I should keep a list of all the Republicans and conservatives I've interviewed who are on their way to prison under Joe Biden, you know, but it's not a small list. And a bunch of them I know. I personally know more than 5 people who've been to prison in the last few years for political crimes. So that was unimaginable in my youth. It was unimaginable 10 years ago. It's happening. I don't know that it's going to slow down anytime soon. I'm not sure exactly how we should respond to it other than to name it, to say out loud what's happening, to be honest about it, not hide it. I think it's reawakened all of us to the importance of our families and of God and the people that we love. Like, it's pushed a lot of us back to first principles. I think it's a good thing. You know, I mean, if you're fat and happy and rich for too long, you can kind of forget what matters. And what matters is God and your family and your friends first, period. And so I do think there's an upside to the chaos. No one ever says it. It's not all bad. Nothing is all bad. People get terminal cancer diagnoses, mm-hmm. and they become, you know, deeper, happier people in some way. I've seen that happen. So there's always an upside to tragedy. Mm-hmm. And I think we should meditate on that a little bit. There was an upside to COVID. I'm sure the same thing happened to you. You get stuck at home, you can't do anything, and all of a sudden you rediscover, oh, I really love spending all day with my wife and kids. You know what I mean? So, like, there's good. There's a good side to this.
Speaking of families, trying to wrap this thing up here, family, the family unit, God, husband, wife, it seems like so much of our culture has just kind of accepted things that are so far from that. And even so much of the right, so much of the Republican Party has simply baked things into the cake, especially when it comes to things like human sexuality. Honestly, the strongest stance you can get from 99% of Republicans in office or running for office is we don't want men and women sports, as if that's somehow pushing back on the culture. How about just the fact that dudes can't become women, period? Why do we give so much ground? We just constantly give ground, and then we'll fight over a little slice of what they've taken.
Well, you know, I think that's changing. I mean, again, and I'm very pessimistic and Scandinavian and morose and dark. And when I used to drink, I would just stare sadly out the window. You know what I mean? And sensible on vodka as it rained. So, like, I'm not an optimistic, cheerful person really by my nature. But I have to say, I interviewed someone this morning, who's a well-known person, who looked right into the camera and said, a totally normal, kind of not political person, who said, well, God's in charge of the universe. The husband is in charge of the home. Those are the leaders. And then, like, government's kind of an afterthought. It's like, 5 years ago, you couldn't find an American, except maybe in the Amish community, who would say God's in charge of the universe, the husband's the head of his home. You weren't allowed to say that. And things have gotten so crazy that I think it's reminded people that this is all fake. And if they're going to tell me a man can become a woman, then I can be equally bold and say something that's countercultural but true, which is that the nuclear family is the only way to happiness and stability. That's just a fact. And, like, not be embarrassed about it. So I see people much more honest than they've ever been, much bolder in expressing what they believe. And I think there's a huge upside to the obvious sadness and chaos all around us.
And it's normal people who are getting bolder and bolder and bolder, which is nice.
Yes.
It's not just people like you, me, what we do. That's what I find inspiring. Anyway, I need to let the man go. We have a live tour September 18th in Houston. I will be on stage with him. In fact, he has amazing guests all over the country. Go to TuckerCarlson.com, get tickets, Art of the Surge at TuckerCarlson.com. Tucker, I'll see you in like a month, my friend.
And honest, this is sincere. I don't know if we're still on camera. Thank you for doing it. This is going to be super fun, and I'm really excited. And I'm a guest in your state, so I look forward to the tour.
It's going to be a blast, my brother. We'll get some barbecue. I can't wait. Let's see you.
Amen. Thank you, Jesse.
See you, brother. Good dude. That's going to be a fun tour. TuckerCarlson.com, and I do have to warn you, it's going to sell really fast. There's nothing I can do about that. It's a limited venue, epicenter, I think is what it's called, but it's limited. You know, so go get your tickets. Also, go switch your cell phone service. It's time to switch your cell phone service. There are hard ways to put your money where your morals are. Have you tried to find a bank? Try to find a bank that doesn't do ESG or DEI. It's almost impossible. Your cell phone service is easy, though. I mean, you go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. We're talking 10 minutes. You can even get a hold of them on the phone. It's 10 minutes. And you're speaking to someone who speaks English. 10 minutes on the phone. You don't need Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. Same 5G network. Pay way less. Pay a company who shares and promotes your values. Go. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
Let's focus on something for a moment, because I know the DNC convention's going on, and I'll play you a little clip of something crazy they said in a moment, but let's remember the big story happening, not just in America right now, the overarching story on the planet, the biggest story on planet Earth right now, the most dangerous thing happening is Western governments turning their guns against their own citizens. For the entirety of Western civilization, Western governments have had their guns pointed outward, right? You know, World War II comes along and we mobilize the forces to go fight evil abroad. We will aim our guns outward. The war on terror, whether or not you agree or disagree with how that war was prosecuted, we have these evil Islamic terrorists trying to murder us. Let's go find them. They'll kill them. Guns pointed outward. Well, things have gotten so corrupt in Western civilization now. We'll just make it about America here. Things have gotten so corrupt, so rotted here. The government has figured out the biggest threat to their power is the patriotic American citizen. So those guns that were all pointed outward are slowly but surely pointing their way inward as governments around the planet have made the very clear decision their citizens are the enemy. And there's nothing in the world going on right now that's more dangerous than that. To be under attack, to be considered an enemy of the state by your own government, historically, is the worst existence you can possibly have. Russia, China, Iran, nuclear war, what's happening in the Middle East. I'm not dismissive about any of those things. I know they matter. But if the United States government has declared me, you, to be enemies of the state, what happens in Russia doesn't matter. And these people, they're not backing off. They are pretending to be the good guys. They're ramping things up. Did you hear this speaker at the convention talking about what Trump will do?
Donald Trump would be able to weaponize the Department of Justice to go after his political opponents. He could even turn the FBI into his own personal police force. That is not how it works in America. That's how it works in dictatorships.
A few moments later,
Donald Trump fell asleep at his own trial. And when he woke up, he made his own kind of history. The first person to run for president with 34 felony convictions. As vice president, Kamala sat in the Situation Room.
As the crowd chants, lock him up. These things are already happening here. I'll just leave you with this little story. There's a woman, 89 years old. She once had to survive in a communist prison camp in Eastern Europe. And this woman at 89 is now going to die, most likely, in prison. But not in Eastern Europe, not in China, not in Russia, not in Iran. You see, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, their DOJ, just arrested this woman for being a pro-life activist, and they're going to send her to federal prison. Having survived a communist prison camp in Eastern Europe, this 89-year-old woman is still going to die as a political prisoner in prison in the United States of America. This is not something that might happen in the future. We have to stop talking like that. What they might do. I can't believe what they could do. This is something that is happening right now to your fellow countrymen, to my fellow countrymen. The most dangerous thing happening on planet Earth is Western governments turning their guns inward against their own citizens, and it's happening here so fast. All right, we have more. We haven't even gotten into Tim Walz stuff yet today. Before we get to Tim Walz stuff, let's get to how do you sleep at night right now? It can be difficult as you sit and brew on all the craziness out there. How do you sleep at night? Well, I can give you a great night's sleep and a great morning. When I say great morning, I mean it's the wake-up that matters, right? Sleep is important, but there are a lot of things that will knock you out, help you go to sleep. How do you feel when you wake? That's the most important thing. The best thing about Dream Powder is not that it's a delicious cup of hot chocolate. That's mine. I have cinnamon chocolate. It's amazing. It's not that, though. It's that you fall asleep, and when you wake up, you feel rested, not heavy and groggy and like you need tape to put your eyes open. No, with Dream Powder, you just feel good. And they sell this stuff 40% off, just a little bag, 40% off at shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go get one bag. You'll never stop ordering this stuff. It's miraculous. I love it. shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
These guys have are even attacking me for my record of service. And I just want to say, I'm proud to serve my country, and I always will be. I'm going to say it again as clearly as I can. I am damn proud of my service to this country. And I firmly believe you should never denigrate another person's service record.
Yeah, he shouldn't be. He's a lying, worthless coward who ran out on his men before they deployed and then pretended like he carried a weapon in war. I'll denigrate your service all day long, you worthless turd. And not because he was National Guard or whatever that may be. That's fine service. That's wonderful service. Being a coward and lying about it is as low as you can possibly get. He's a piece of crap. Joining me now, my friend Wade Miller, Executive Director, Center for Renewing America, and a combat veteran, an actual one, United States Marine. Wade, these people think they're going to shame guys like us. Don't denigrate my service. Screw him and screw his service or lack thereof.
Yeah, it's absolutely infuriating, especially for those of us who have actually served honorably and we're not lying about our service and conflating it and making it look like it's more impressive than it needs to be. And the left is absolutely kind of glomming onto this idea that we're somehow denigrating the service of other Americans. And the fact is that Waltz lied repeatedly about his rank. He lied repeatedly about, or allowed it to be lied, and then didn't correct people about where he deployed, what types of environments he deployed into, and then lied about his actual service and inferred that he carried rifles into combat. And it goes on and on. And this isn't just a one-off. He repeatedly made these assertions over the last 20 years. In fact, I think his congressional office coin even lists his rank as a command sergeant major, which he was frocked as a command sergeant major. He was never formally promoted. And by the way, part of the condition of all of that occurring was that he was committed to going on the rumored upcoming combat deployment, which that he then skipped his whole entire chain of command and snuck through his retirement because he knew that if he had gone to his chain of command, they would have denied it because he had already committed to the upcoming deployment. So everything about his service, especially in his last several years, is dishonorable. The way he retired is dishonorable. And then the way he has talked about his service and lied about it has been completely dishonorable.
Well, they love their military mascots, don't they, Wade? I talk about this all the time. Democrats are very obviously the anti-American party. And that's no defense of useless, coward Republicans. But Democrats hate the country. Everyone watching their convention can see that. America sucks. It's evil. It's racist. We're on native land. It's all this other, a big bunch of grievance crap. But they know they can try to cover up, try to convince that old Democrat, that Union Democrat, that veteran Democrat, that they don't really hate it by trotting out Tim Walz and pretending like he's some kind of military hero. They do this all the time.
Yeah, he's basically a dingist communist, which is kind of the post-Mao version of communism. And he's a white guy with white hair, and he looks like he, could hang out at the local coffee shop. So they're glomming on to him as some sort of lie that he, like, that middle America is something that they still care about and traditional values is something that they care about. He's about as radical as they come. And the policies he's pushing in his state are inherently anti-American. And then, he really leans heavily on a service that he's lied about to prop up and make it look legitimate. And it turns out that a lot of it is just an absolute lie. And he's just kind of a throne of lies.
Well, speaking of throne of lies, Wade, they lie about things they don't even really need to lie about. Biden is famous for this. So just tell these gigantic lies that are so odd and everyone knows their lies. And of course, he'd always follow it up with not a joke. Whenever he said that, you knew he was telling some big lie. Tim Walz lied about how his wife got pregnant, pretending like they needed IVF to get pregnant. Who would even do something like that?
Well, I think this is just like inherently part of the culture of the radical left. It's the ends justify the means. And that means that if they're telling lies, will sell the public on their agenda, they're completely at home doing it. And you're seeing this in woke and weaponized government, left and right. They're just lying and lying and lying in order to sell their agenda because they don't really care fundamentally about telling the truth. I mean, we just saw today that the labor data is being downward projected by 818,000 jobs. It's the largest that I've ever seen. It may be the largest downgrade ever. I don't think that that just accidentally happened. I think that the regime gives us all the data to sell their agenda, and then they kind of blend in some, basic form of credibility by saying, oh, we're revising it down. But that's after the regime media has been propelling this narrative that the left is, record job growth and all of these things. And it's an afterthought once they correct it. They don't follow up with news stories correcting themselves and saying, we apologize, this actually isn't the record job growth that you all thought it was. It's actually pretty abysmal, and inflation is still really terrible, and the consumer prices are destroying the middle class. The regime media goes right along with it, and they'll glom onto the next statistic, and then the process repeats itself over and over and over again.
Wade, I saw Michelle Obama got up last night, and boy, this little tidbit, it said so much without saying much at all. Here she was.
All of our contributions deserve to be accepted and valued. Because no one has a monopoly on what it means to be an American. No one.
They love talking like that, Wade. America doesn't mean anything. It can mean anything you want. We're multicultural. This is, of course, how someone trying to completely gut and destroy America would talk.
Yeah, America has to mean something, and being an American has to mean something. It has to be based on a common set of principles and values, or else it means nothing. If it's, kind of like the left's conception of the Constitution, that it's living, it can just literally mean whatever they want. If the government can insist that the organic laws of this country can mean whatever they need at any time, then we really don't have the rule of law. And you have to have a certain type of culture to sustain liberty. And the left just wants to basically say that anyone who argues that is inherently bigoted, racist, sexist, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you can't possibly defend it, which is why, they're completely at home with, a Marxist who are inherently anti-American or Islamists, et cetera, et cetera, being right at home in their party, because at the end of the day, their commonality is they want to destroy what it means to be America, and they want to gloss over it with all these nice sounding woke terms, when in reality, it's a very inherently aggressive and in some instances, violent agenda that they have for the future of the country and against it, the opposition to that change.
Wade, thank you so much, my brother. Semper Fi, I appreciate it. Benjamin Weingarten is going to join us next. We're going to talk to him about illegals voting in elections. This is a thing that obviously happens. On what scale? What scale can we anticipate when you bring in 20 million people in the course of 4 years? That's something we should be concerned about when presidential elections are decided by much more narrower margins than that. Talk to Benjamin about that next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
There's two options that we're looking at, and one is staying in, forming that new party, but we run the risk of a Kamala Harris and Waltz presidency, because we draw votes from Trump, or we draw somehow more votes from Trump, or we walk away right now and join forces with Donald Trump, and we walk away from that, and we explain to our base why we're making this decision.
That's quite a candid admission on camera for someone running for president, isn't it? That was Nicole Shanahan, RFK Jr.'s running mate. Joining me now, Benjamin Weingarten, editor-at-large, Real Clear Investigations. Okay, Benjamin, that's quite a thing to say. What does it mean if these two drop out? They're, of course, scheduled to speak in Phoenix. Trump is scheduled to speak in Phoenix. What does this mean?
Well, if you assume that this election comes down to thousands of votes across a handful of states, and by all measures, that appears to be the trajectory of the thing, and you're talking about a candidate in RFK Jr. who's garnering multiple percentage points, particularly in the swing states, this could be a decisive move for the election. I'll caveat that, of course, setting aside all the machinations that the regime is going to engage in to ensure it gets the margin that it needs. This is a big deal. This also, by the way, I think illustrates a broader theme of this race, which is that it's the regime versus those who have been crushed by the regime. And RFK Jr., of course, has been smeared and maligned by the Democrats. His family has been targeted by the deep state. And at the end of the day, him throwing his weight behind Trump really could play a decisive role, again, when we're talking about such narrow margins.
Benjamin, how much weight is it? Because we haven't talked about him a lot on the show. Honestly, I haven't talked about the campaigns, any of them, a lot on the show. But are we talking about someone who's going to bring 5 percentage points? I don't understand how big his following is. Help me understand.
Yeah, we've seen, according to polling, certainly when he is on the ballot, it moves a pretty substantial percentage, anywhere from, say, 2 to 7% thereabouts, depending on what state you're talking about. So, again, even going back to 2020 and 2016 was obviously down to thousands of votes in a few states. 2020, same thing. You know, 4 or 5 states, tens of thousands of votes across those states. To the extent you have voters who are fed up with the machine and they're willing to go behind Trump and or not back, of course, Kamala Harris and the regime, that's meaningful and potentially decisive.
Benjamin, you have a piece up about Dome and how she still has zero policies out there, but you wrote a piece trying to understand the positions she has taken and they're horrific. What are you talking about?
Well, I think that there are two questions that this election ought to ultimately hinge on if the merits mean anything. And one is, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? But the other is Kamala Harris lying now about the positions that she has taken or that her flacks have taken? Or was she lying then? And by then, I mean 2020 and prior. If you look down the line at her positions on issues, longstanding positions, whether it comes to the anti-energy agenda, anti-fracking, whether it comes to universal health care, whether it comes to open borders and legalizing an invasion of this country, and on issue after issue, she is as radical as they come. And yet you see now her flacks trying to distance themselves from those positions with the caveats that they're going to go for a tax on unrealized gains, I guess, of 25% and a massive capital gains tax. And of course, stealing Trump policies like no tax on tips. The question that you have to ask yourself, the question that the American people have to ask themselves is this the candidate who ran in 2020, who is as radical as they come on all issues, the most liberal, so liberal, I'd say, most progressive, radically leftist senator during her tenure there? Or is this the person now who's trying to triangulate and shift all of her positions? And there's no good answer. One answer is, yes, she takes essentially the maximalist communist position that she had in 2020. The other is she holds no views and you can't trust her at anything that she says. So I think that is the question that only Donald Trump really is going to be able to pose to her, because obviously the media, so-called media, but really the regime mouthpieces, have formed a protective bubble around her. She's not forced to speak. When the campaign speaks, it's through flacks. Only Donald Trump will be able to put that question to her, and I don't think she's going to have a good answer for it before the American people.
Okay, so the contrast, I was thinking about this today, the contrast in the two campaigns is amazing. Trump's campaign couldn't possibly be more open. Some would argue, I would probably argue, probably too open. He's sitting down with every Tom, Dick, and Harry podcaster, ABC News. And I mean, it doesn't matter who it is, Trump will sit down and talk, which I really admire. I don't know that I agree with the campaign strategy, but I admire it. She is hiding under a desk, as you just pointed out. The only time you even hear her positions, it's from some dork they roll out on MSNBC. So who understands the electorate better?
Fair question. I think what it reflects on the Trump side is, first of all, this is who he is. I mean, he gave access, to your point, maybe to a fault, to his worst enemies when he was the president of the United States. And of course, they tried to shiv him at every turn they got. And he may work under the assumption all press is good press. The media really is the enemy of the people. So going and jousting with them, maybe that ultimately pays off. What Kamala understands, what the regime understands, and what we've seen in terms of how they maneuvered, and that's a polite way of putting it, Joe Biden out of the way, is that it really doesn't matter who the front man is for the regime. They ran the basement campaign in 2020. They're running a new updated version of a basement campaign in 2024, where the candidate doesn't have to speak, the candidate doesn't have to take questions. They assume all Democrat voters are in the bag. And if they can just propagandize to the nth degree, they can move enough normie voters or Trump haters who otherwise really disagree with the Democrat agenda and get them to go along. So I think both of them understand the electorate. The Trump position has to be the more aggressive position, I think, by default, because you have the entire government, the academy, media, all across the board, all of our cultural institutions are all in line behind the regime. I don't even say Kamala Harris, behind the regime. So it makes sense for her to play prevent defense. Prevent defense fails in sports a lot, but when you're playing sports, you don't have the refs on your team and everyone else on your team. So that's the challenge to Donald Trump, is how do you break through a protective bubble and essentially an information space that is at total war with you?
You brought up Democrats cheating in the various ways they do in elections. You've done extensive reporting on illegals, non-citizens voting in our elections. Elaborate on this for those of us who haven't done that kind of digging.
Yeah, so there have been tens of thousands of non-citizens cropping up on voter rolls really over the last two decades, and at least hundreds of instances of those individuals that we know of that have been caught, found to be voting in past elections. There is no documentary proof of citizenship necessary to register as a voter in America, which is a remarkable thing in and of itself. And then when you look at the additional state requirements, for example, for voting in person or absentee, very few states require any sort of ID that would require you to prove that you're a citizen to actually be able to participate in elections. Now combine that with the biggest invasion we've ever had in the history of the country, and obviously it raises questions about, are we going to have illegal aliens showing up on voter rolls en masse, and are they going to vote in meaningful enough numbers to swing a very tight election? And then you combine this, of course, with the fact that Democrats, progressive groups have protected this whole notion of third-party voter registration and mobilization, which of course could be really meaningful in states that allow ballot harvesting, even before you get to illegal acts. You put it all together, and potentially you have the elections in a position to be swung, if not this race, then maybe down the road, by potential illegal alien votes, while Democrats are trying to allow non-citizens to vote increasingly in jurisdictions across the country. So I went out and basically asked of the secretaries of state or the election boards in all the swing states, what are you doing to ensure that non-citizens aren't getting on the rolls and that they're not going to vote on election day? And I've got to say, the response was pretty dumbfounding. Essentially, they said, there's not a lot of evidence in the past. It's illegal to do it, as if illegality is going to be a bar to someone whose first act in this country is breaking our law. And or there might be innocent victims, of course, of the progressive groups going out there aggressively trying to register and mobilize everyone they can. And a lot of people get signed up to vote when they're simply getting a driver's license. And you can get a driver's license as a non-citizen in almost two dozen states, and actually as a non-citizen in every state, but as an illegal alien in almost two dozen states. You put all this together, there's no coherent, systematic effort to cross the voter rolls with citizenship data, which is already incomplete to begin with when you have millions of quote unquote undocumented in this country. And it presents a potential mess, or a very, very minimum, auto erode our confidence in the integrity of the election system. And so I reported about this for Real Clear Investigations. The House has put out legislation that passed in the House that would require documentary proof of citizenship. Democrats are stalling it in the Senate. We'll see if this is a fight in the upcoming budget battles in September. But from a practical perspective, you're not even really going to be able to implement this prior to Election Day 2024. So when we look back at how tight this race is and the chicanery that goes on, you got to look at non-citizen voting as a potential issue here. And almost everything is passive here. It's all if a third party group, a lawyer, a party brings a challenge against certain votes. But how are you even going to find the population of votes that may be non-citizen votes in the first place? There's no voter roll aggressive maintenance, so-called, when it comes to non-citizenry across this country. And that poses, I think, an existential threat ultimately to our elections.
Yeah. No, I'm sure Republicans will stand strong in Congress on that issue. Benjamin, thank you so much. I appreciate it, brother. All right. Way of lighten the mood. Next.
Hey there. I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
I love when communists embarrass themselves. You remember Jamie Raskin, right? I could play a million sound bites right now of Jamie Raskin being detestable. Most recently, most famously, he was on camera describing how if Donald Trump wins the election, they're simply not going to allow him to take office. He said that, and he predicted a civil war. We'll just tell him he's a felon, he can't join, and then we have civil war. So this is a terrible human being. And remember, most of these people are dumb, really legitimately dumb. They can't say anything that isn't written for them, put up on the teleprompter somewhere. I don't even have a teleprompter here in the studio. We just kind of do this thing, put some notes on a piece of paper, and we sit down and riff. These people can't get through a 5-minute speech without a teleprompter. And the teleprompter went down on Jamie Raskin. He looked like a deer in the headlights up there.
Someone should have told Donald Trump that the president's job under Article 2 of the Constitution
They're just dumb. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.